Okay, good evening, everyone. Parshas Bamidbar, Shnas Tavshin Ayin Tes. Okay, so we know that the beginning of the parsha deals with a census, the counting of the Jewish people. And the first thing we're going to talk tonight about is the tribe of Levi, Shevet Levi. And if we take a look on page 742. This is Perakimel Pasek Lamid Tes. Kopkude Alaviyim Ashapakad Moshe Aaron Api Hashem Mishpachaisam. The count of the Leviim that Moshe and Aaron counted by the command of Hashem according to their families. Kol Zarchem Ben Chaydesh Vamayla, every male from a month and up. Shnayim ve'esrim alev, 22,000. That was the total number of the tribe of Levi. The tribe of Levi was counted separate from the rest of the Jewish people. The Jewish people were counted from 20 to 60. The Leviim were counted from a month and up. And the tribe of Levi came up being 22,000 Leviim. And the Ramban focuses on the fact that we have the tribe of Levi being the smallest of all the tribes. We're not even talking about from 20 to 60. We're talking about from a month and up. And they're still smaller than the smallest tribe. And as Ramban points out, we were not yet at the point where the Kohanim were carrying the Aron, where there was already that kind of danger involved in carrying the Aron. You know, if you didn't carry it properly, it could actually bring death. You know, that wasn't happening yet. And therefore, the Ramban says, "V'zeh t'miya." This is a wonderment. Eich lo yiu avodah v'chasidah bruchei Hashem k'shar kol ha'am. Why would it be the blessed ones, the servants, the pious ones of Hashem, be as numerous as the rest of the Jewish people? So the Ramban has two explanations. V'anichay shev shesay chizuk l'masha amar Rabbi Yisenu. This supports that which our sages say. Yishivtei shalei v'lo yihoyu b'shibad melechas mitzray v'vaydas perach. The Leviim were not enslaved. They were exempted. They were not enslaved. They were forced to remain in Mitzrayim, but they were not enslaved. They were not subjected to the back-breaking labor. V'nei Yisrael asher meriru ha-Mitzriyim es chayeyem avayda kasha, kedei lama'atam. The Egyptians that had the Jews doing so much hard work, the purpose of that was to decrease their population. HaYakadosh Baruch Hu Marbas HaMekaneg Gzeres Mitzrayim. Countering that, the Rebbeinu Shalom made them even more numerous. K'may Shammah, as the Pasuk says, V'chasher Yanu Aysay, and as they afflicted them, K'en Yirbe V'chen Yifreitz. This is, they would multiply and they would spread. And therefore, it would come out that if the population explosion of the Jewish people in Egypt was a Hashem's response to the Egyptians trying to decrease the populating of the Jewish people. So Hashem's response to that was, you're going to try to slow it up, I'm going to increase it. That didn't happen to the tribe of Levi, because the tribe of Levi was not involved in the enslavement. So that's the first Ramban's answer. The Psukim tell us that the Jewish people's population explosion was due to the backbreaking labor. The backbreaking labor was imposed upon them to actually decrease them. Hashem's response to that was, well, the more you try to decrease, the more they're going to increase. That only happened to everybody else, not to Leviim, because they weren't enslaved. That's the first answer why the tribe of Levi is so much smaller. The second explanation given by the Ramban is, V'hulai ha-yazem ikas hazokin aleihem. Perhaps this had to do with the anger of Yaakov Avinu. We know that Yaakov Avinu, before his death, blessed his children. When it came to Shimon and Levi, didn't he get a blessing? Actually, Yaakov expressed his anger at them for what they did to the city of Shechem. Therefore, says the Ramban, V'hulai ha-yazem ikas hazokin aleihem. Perhaps the fact that they weren't as numerous was due to the anger of the grandfather Yaakov. Ki shimet shehu ach shemeru b'chlusin. When it comes to the tribe of Shimon, that right now, at this point of the counting, Shimon is a very large tribe. Nismatu bechnisas el ares. By the time it came for the entering of the land of Eretz Yisrael, 40 years later, Shimon had shrunk le'esrim mishnayim aleph, 22,000. That's because the tribe of Shimon was very much involved in being seduced by the Moabite women. The plague that followed that wiped out a large part of the tribe of Shimon. So at the end of the day, the tribe of Shimon, the effect of Yaakov's anger on them regarding their decrease in population size, that was fulfilled later on, before they went to the end of Israel. That's when they became so small. But Levi, the tribe of his pious ones, they did not become decreased by the plague. They didn't get decreased by the plague. They're not involved in that sin, and therefore the effect of Yaakov Avinu's anger upon them took place right away. So the Ramban's second answer is that another reason why the tribe of Levi, he says, perhaps another reason why the tribe of Levi was so small, that was an effect that came from Yaakov Avinu's anger at them.
They complement each other, right?
What do you mean?
These two explanations. Because the Shimon is large now due to the first explanation. Eventually it's decreased due to the second.
Okay, good. According to the second explanation, Yaakov Avinu's anger is what affected the size of the tribes. It became fulfilled in the tribe of Shimon later on, 40 years later, before they entered the land of Eretz Yisrael, and happened to Levi right away in the beginning. So that's how the Ramban approaches why the tribe of Levi was so small. Now, I think it's worth mentioning a question that the Ramban says that Shimon was affected by Yaakov's anger because of the fact that later on they decreased to 32,000. But that was 22,000. But that was 22,000 from 20 to 60. The tribe of Levi is still only 22,000 from the age of a month and up, which means that Levi is still substantially smaller than Shimon. Even according to this reasoning, the second reasoning, you could ask a question, why still was Levi so substantially smaller than Shimon? Because even when Shimon did become so small, that was certainly from 20 to 60. The tribe of Levi is only 22,000 from a month and up. So I'm just mentioning that question that could be asked. Now the Ora Chaim, and the Ora Chaim addresses this question. So he first focuses on his question about the second answer of the Ramban. And his question on the second answer of the Ramban, that the anger of Yaakov is what affected their size. So his first thing is, number one, basically, what's the connection? There's nothing, when Yaakov expressed his anger with them, there was never any kind of mention that because of that, they'll be small in size. What's the connection? Where does it come to say that because of his anger at them, because of what they did to the city of Shechem, therefore their numbers were smaller? V'oid, another question. This is a really very interesting point that Ora Chaim says. He's going to show us that there was a point of time, actually, that we should say the tribe of Levi caught up. V'oid timtza b'mispar haba b'divrei hayamim. The book of Chronicles, Divrei Hayamim, Aleph.
So after this event, not before.
After, okay. Later on, in the Divrei Hayamim, there's a census that's taken later on, that's recorded in Divrei Hayamim. Hayu alaviyim shmeina u'shloishim elef. The Leviyim were 38,000, miben shloishim mishana aben chemishim mishana, from 30 until 50. That's the age of when a Levi works in the Beis HaMikdash. U'bemisparim v'parashas nasai bo l'chal cheshbein shmeinas alafim v'heimeyes u'shmeinim. In Parashas Nasai, when we count those Leviim eligible to do the work of the Leviim, which is again from the age of 30 to 50, the total number comes out to be 8,500. So here, at this point in time, they're 8,500, and a number of years later, they're up to 32,000. Nimtzu shoyisivu da'al chaloka b'kirv ha'mispar zeh, four times more than they were now. U'v'mispar b'nei Yisrael ha'basham, and when the Jewish people are counted there, you don't find the Jewish people doubled in size. Meaning at the same time, later on, when we find that those eligible to work as Leviim quadrupled in size, you don't find the rest of the Jewish people at that point of time even doubled. Now, actually, if I understand this correctly, the Jewish people counted at that time were from 20 until 100. So he says, if you would now take the Leviim and follow that pattern, then it'll even be more than 32,000. And therefore, his point is, if Yaakov Avinu's anger is supposed to keep them small, that affects their size. Well, it doesn't seem to have affected them later, because later on, they seem to have caught up. So that's how the Arachayim asked. That's his question on the second answer of the Ramban. Regarding the first answer of the Ramban, says the Arachayim, he says, that's good. That's a good answer. To say that the population growth depended on the slavery, and Levi wasn't enslaved, therefore they didn't experience that population growth, he says, that's good. However, Avala Yitzhak with the Maimar Chazav, it will not work out according to the following Medrash. Sha'amru, who said, by the time Yaakov Avinu died, the Jewish people were already 600,000. That means the 600,000, the number count, the 600,000 counted here, was not just something that happened. Wait, don't make faces yet. Wait, give it a chance. Okay, give it a chance. The number 600,000 that is counted here is not a new number or a number, a recent number. It's an old number. That's the number that they had when Yaakov Avinu died. Now, we got to deal with the Pesukim, right? The Pesukim said, as they afflicted them, that's how they multiplied. But they already had multiplied before. Okay? And what we have to say in order for the psukim to work out according to what this saying, according to what they say, again, I'm showing you. What that means to say is that although they should have diminished, the slavery should have diminished their numbers. No, it did not. As they were afflicted, that is how they multiplied to be able to remain with the original number that they had even before they were enslaved. That's what it means. It doesn't mean that they became so numerous in the sense that they became more than they ever were. It means to say they were able to remain this number of 600,000 from 20 to 60, even though they were being afflicted and they were being killed and their children were being killed. Even so, because Hashem was again responding, you're trying to diminish them from their number. It's not going to happen. They're going to continue to multiply and to populate as they did before. Okay? So basically, so therefore, it comes out as that this number that we have, 600,000, was actually already before the enslavement. And if it was already before the enslavement, then why was it Levi as big? Because if the number is 600,000, that's outside of Levi. So if we're saying that every 600,000 already existed before the enslavement, then why wasn't the tribe of Levi that number? So he's not refuting the Ramban, but he's saying, if you follow this medrash that says that the Jewish people already 600,000 by the time Yaakov Avinu died, and the whole population issue is they didn't become less, although they should have, well then, what happened to Levi? Why was Levi still so small? So the Arachayim says the following. It's very, I'm going to call it original because I don't think this is not the usual way that we look at it. But he basically wants to say like this. V'anochem be'enai, who kishevet Levi ma'is echod lahem kamasei amram asher sholach es ishtei v'shvil gezeres habena yilayt. We know that before Moshe Rabbeinu was born, what did his father do? His father divorced his mother because there was the decree of every boy is going to be has to be cast into the Nile. So the Gemara says that Amram got up and said, "There's no purpose of remaining married if we can't bear children like this." And the Gemara, I believe, says, or at least that's the way I've always understood the Gemara, says, and everybody followed. Everybody means everybody. So the Aruch Chaim is not learning that way. It's not everybody. It's everybody from the tribe of Levi. Everybody from the tribe of Levi. They were the ones who followed suit. Now, why did they follow suit? And basically, and now to you get to the point is trying to say is like this. You know, at the end of the day, the Aruch Chaim is going to say, so you know why the tribe of Levi was smaller? Because although Amram took his wife back, the other Levium didn't. Or many of them didn't. Not saying all of them didn't, but many of them didn't. And therefore, you know, people aren't married, not going to have as many children. The thing is, though, number one, you know, why did the tribe of Levi, again, the tribe of Levi, as Aruch Chaim points out, were always the tribe that were dedicated to studying Torah. They were always the higher spiritual people. You know, why would they do that? So he says that the reason why they did it was because of the original reason why Amram did it. Basically, if we have to cast all the boys into the water, there are going to be no boys. There is no purpose of having the Jewish people. Although there could still be Jewish girls and their children be Jewish, Amram at some point at the beginning held that it's not worth it doing it that way. It's not worth it that way. And therefore he divorced his wife. Now, he took back his wife. Why did he take back his wife? Who told him to take back his wife? Did it on his own? He didn't do it on his own. It's because his daughter, Miriam, basically, you know, she had a prophecy, and she, Gemara says she chastised him, but it was a prophecy that she had. She had a prophecy that her mother is going to give birth to the Mashiach Shal Yisrael. So the prophecy is what helped Amram to be convinced to take his wife back. Others, apparently they didn't know the Nebuah, they didn't know that they, or they, whether they did or didn't, wasn't relevant to them. And therefore, they felt that they have to continue this by not having children because the boys are going to be cast into the Nile. Now, but why were the rest of the Jewish people different? Why were they different? Why didn't they follow Amram's example? So here, the Aruch Chaim says something interesting, and I hope I'll say it over well because I struggled with it as I was preparing it. And the way he seems to say it is like this. What he seems to be saying is that the rest of the Jewish people as slaves, the way he says it is, they were not as, I want to make sure I don't say it the wrong way, but basically what he says it is, they were not as bothered by the fact that if they have children, if they have the boys and the boys don't make it,
they were slaves.
They were not as bothered by the fact that if they have boys and the boys get cast into the Nile, it didn't bother them as much. Basically, they decided, they felt, they're going to keep their normal lifestyle. They're going to keep the normal lifestyle. And because they were slaves, where they were not as refined as the Levium who were not enslaved, they kept that regular lifestyle up, even if it meant that it could happen that the boys are going to get killed. The Gemara says at the end of the day, how did the rest of the women give birth? At the end of the day, they did give birth, right? And they still multiplied. So the Gemara says they went out to the field and they gave birth in the field, and miracles happened that the children were saved. Okay? Says the Aruch Chaim, they had to go ahead and give birth out in the fields. That is for people who live a rough life. If you don't live a rough life, if you're a little bit more on the high end side, you're not gonna do that. So basically, the way the Aruch Chaim is setting it up is that the rest of the Jewish people decided to remain having a regular life. Their children would be killed. Well, as slaves, they were not as sensitive to it. Not as sensitive to it.
One more generation and everybody would have disappeared.
How would you mean?
Well, without them, I mean, how could it pick up?
Good, but they still decided to have a regular life.
For one generation.
Whatever. They felt, I mean, I'm understanding the Aruch Chaim to say that they just decided they're going to keep living as regular or whatever it's going to be. Anyway, he seems to be saying it is that, and they were not as bothered by that because they were a little desensitized to life being slaves. The Levim, on the other hand, were not enslaved. They were more sensitive to it. They're certainly more sensitive to the way they had to give birth and hiding. And therefore, they were not going to go ahead and just keep the regular lifestyle. At the same time, but there's a mitzvah to have children. I mean, it's understood you're supposed to have children. So why didn't they do it? Well, the answer is they felt that it's not that there's no point of it if the boys are going to be thrown into the Nile. So therefore, the Aruch Chaim was saying like this. It overlaps the idea. It works with the idea that the Levim were not enslaved. But the way the Aruch Chaim is saying it is that the reason why we don't have as many Leviim is because the Leviim followed Amram's example. They all divorced their wives. He took his wife back because he had a prophecy. Many of them did not. I believe, if I understand the Aruch Chaim's wording properly, the fact that there still were 22,000 Leviim, right, had to mean that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam made sure that the Leviim didn't cease to exist. And there were Leviim who did take their wives back. But again, it wasn't going to be as many because as many of them did not follow what Amram did. The rest of the, and the reason why they did not follow Amram was for Amram's original reason. The boys are going to be killed. There is no point of bearing children and therefore remaining married. The rest of the Jewish people, the way I understand the Aruch Chaim is, they decided to continue their regular lifestyle, even though there was a danger to the life of the children, and therefore they did populate. Now, it's interesting to Aruch Chaim's explanation because typically we learn that the Jewish people continued having children in Egypt was an act of faith. It was an act of faith, of emunah. And he seems to be kind of, you know, taking a little bit of a different approach. If I get that it was, again, the way I understand it is that it was more of a different approach than it was just, well, they decided they're remaining with the same lifestyle. All right. Okay. One last explanation about this, about why Levi was smaller. And this comes from the Netziv in his commentary HaMikdamar. So he cites the Ramban's question, why they're so small, and he says two answers. Chada, the Sevivav Nishara Ma'id. Now, that means like this. The tribe of Levi, they were the ones that were always dedicated to the service of Hashem. That was from the beginning. And because they were on such a high level of spirituality, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals more strict with those who are higher. HaKadosh Baruch Hu medakdim et tzadikim k'chot asayra. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is demanding from the righteous k'chot asayra, even without no deviation allowed. And therefore, because of that, if anyone from the tribe of Levi did something wrong, what would happen? Immediate punishment. Okay, nen shumaher aleiza oven. If they ever did a sin, it was a quick response. It was a quick punishment. V'gam ki heima yadu gamatan teira mahu chet v'oven shloizehu ratzen Hashem. V'kibulu aleim ol teira mitzvus k'mayha oveis. Here he says something very interesting, the Netziv. That we know the oveis kept the Torah. So he says the Leviim, because they're on that higher level, they also kept the Torah. Which means that they understood clearly what does Hashem want, what doesn't Hashem want. And therefore, v'nasa k'moy neder, therefore, their observance of Torah mitzvahs was like a vow. They accepted upon themselves. They weren't obligated to do it, but they accepted it. That acceptance is like any time you accept to do a mitzvah, it becomes a ned, becomes a vow of sorts. Hashem be'avsei nechshav lechet. And when you break a vow, that's a very serious thing. And therefore, he's trying to Masha'enk and call Yisrael Yadim Umad Ba'an Tayr, the Kibbul Aleim, called the Precious. He said the Jewish people didn't know as much as them. And because they didn't know as much of them, you know, whatever they didn't do properly wasn't considered a sin because they never really accepted it upon themselves. So the tribe of Levi who did keep the Torah, the tribe of Levi that was on a very high level of spirituality, are therefore, number one, Hashem demands from them more, and therefore they were quickly punished for any sin that they did. And number two, or the other part of it is the fact that since they had accepted the Torah, like the others kept the Torah, by accepting the Torah, that's like a vow. Breaking a vow is a very serious thing. And again, as the righteous and pious people that they were, for breaking a vow, they were punished immediately. So therefore, there was a few, you know, it says that it's in, you know why there's so few of them? Because as righteous and special as they were, when they did something wrong, they were punished immediately. Okay?
But that would mean that they were always much smaller. From the beginning to today.
They were always much smaller when? From when? When?
From day one.
Could be.
But, and it there any evidence of that? There was no, nothing.
It's not relevant. I mean, we don't have any counting or anything.
No, but until it, there was. For example, but Shimon, they knew that it went up. That it.
Shimon went up?
No.
Levi eventually went up.
Levi eventually.
Right. Then if it went up, then.
Because at a certain, so I would answer that question by saying that at the point after the giving of the Torah, so first of all, you don't have the vow aspect. Everybody accepted the Torah, so everybody's kind of the same. And you'd have to say also that they were not on that same level, perhaps, in the sense that so much was demanded from them. Meaning, you bring up a very good point. According to Netziv, you'd have to say that the tribe of Levi at this point of time is on such a high level, that they were under such a high, therefore there was such a demand on their behavior that they became so small because when they did something wrong, they were punished. We don't find that later. You'd have to say that at this point of time, they were really on a very high level. Maybe that's the aspect of the vow that brings this up. But then he says another explanation. Okay, there's another explanation. And this is a little bit more esoteric, but it's very interesting the way he says it. Something that needs to grow, and it's something that's more precious. It takes a longer time for it to come complete. A fruit tree, a non-bearing tree, a tree does not bear fruit, okay? He says, grows quicker than a tree bearing fruit, than a tree that bears fruit. Okay? And any kind of fruit tree that is considered more expensive, more unique, more special, more rare, it takes a longer time for it to grow. We know that man is compared to a tree. Anyone who is his essence is meant to be greater than someone else's, Gidulei Kasha Mesachar. His development takes longer. Mishumhachi Kal Yisrael may Avram Ravina Shabalim Mitzrayim may Pavel Rebbe Kolkach. We don't find the Jewish people. Avram Ravina had a family, but it wasn't as big as this. And he's saying the pshat is because the family of Avram Ravina, the tree of Avram Ravina, takes time to develop. Shabalim Mitzrayim Sham Nigmar Gidulam. Once they came to Mitzrayim, they were essentially complete. I mean, they had a lot of things to deal with, but in their essence, they were complete. And therefore, they can now be as big as they are because that is the manifestation of their complete the completion of their growth. The tribe of Levi, it took longer for them to develop until they came to Eretz Yisrael. It's a very unique explanation. A lot to think about what it means exactly. But it's a very interesting approach. Just like trees, the more special the tree is, the longer it takes for it to grow. So, there is this concept, the tribe of Levi, what he's basically saying is, the tribe of Levi in their essence is essentially greater than the rest of the Jewish people. And therefore, it took longer for them to become complete. But the completion manifests itself in the full number of the tribes. Okay. Now, another thought. And that's the following. When the Torah lists all the numbers of each tribe, right, they all end off in numbers of 100. Okay? So if you look back, let's say, take a look on page 734.
One is 50,
right. Good. Okay. But at the end of the day, if you look in, not 734. Look back at page 728. Okay, so Pasuk Chaf Aleph, what's the total number of Reuven? 46,500. Shimon, which you looked at a few lines after, is 59,300. Gad is 40,650. Everybody else, again, your next one, which is Yehuda, 74,600. Next one, Yisachar, 54,400. Everybody gets rounded off in the hundreds. Really? Every tribe is exactly that number?
That is one.
Exactly that number? And God, okay, God is a little bit different. They go down to the tens. But everything is rounded off. What's the pshat?
It's rounded.
Okay. So now, the Meshech Chachma explains it in the following way. Meshech Chachma explains that as the Pasuk says, let me just get the Pasuk that he goes on, right, which is the Pasuk by Levi. So this is Perek. No, not that one. Perek Gimel Pasuk Tazayin, right? Which is a Pasuk. It says, "Va'ivkarei son Moshe al pi Hashem kasher tziva." Moshe commanded them based on the command of God as he was commanded. So the way that he explains is like the Meshech Chachma explains. Yitachin dechsib b'mispar Yisrael ben esrim shana v'mala koytzav b'Yisrael typically writes some tziva isam. When the Pasuk with the Torah expresses, when Hashem tells Moshe to count, so the count is the number of Jews from 20 and up, Kol Yitzav Yisrael, whoever goes out to the army, that's who you go out and count. So basically, we're counting the number of soldiers. The Meshech Chachma says, we know that the soldiers were broken down into different groups. The smallest group was, they were broken down into groups, and the groups had officers. We have Sarei Alafim, officers over 1,000, Sarei Meos, over 100, Sarei Chamishim, over 50, Sarei Asaris, over 10, that's it. That's the smallest number. So basically, the regiments of the Jewish army, right, they had different layers, different officers, and the smallest group was 10. Less than 10 they didn't have. Which would mean that any extra numbers had to basically be, you know, had to somehow or another be spread out amongst everyone. But everything was supposed to be broken down into the smallest number would be 10. So the Meshech Chachma is saying, you know why all the numbers are rounded off? Because when you're trying to break everything down into 10, you're trying to break everything down into the small, if the smallest regiment is supposed to be 10, it's the Sarei Asaris, those in charge of 10, then all the numbers are going to be rounded off. Because you're trying to get everything broken down into the lowest number being 10. Now, of course, were there extras around? There were extras around. They had to be scattered and they had to be somehow or another, you know, placed amongst groups. But the breakdown was meant to be a breakdown to the smallest number of 10. And therefore, everything is rounded off to zero. That's what the Meshech Chachma explains. Now, at the same time, what about the Levium? The Levium, that wasn't an army. That wasn't an count for the army. And they also were rounded off. Their numbers were also rounded off. So he said, well, he says it is, regarding the number of the Levium from 20, from a month and up, Shemisham nichnas al Pesach ha'oyel, ubas kol yetzis v'meres kach tinoikis. How did Moshe Rabbeinu count from a month? Moshe Rabbeinu would walk into the house. He would stand by the tent, the heavenly voice would come out and tell how many babies are in here. Lo nimnu gam kein achadim kashat tziva b'mispar Yisrael. They also weren't counted just by single units. They're counted the same way as the Jewish people. And that's what it means, v'yivkarei samayish al pi Hashem. Moshe counted them by the command of God, kashat tziva, as he was commanded before. Meaning, you're commanded before to round them off, here also round them off. Now we know there was one other count that had to take place. Because they had to, all the firstborn, right, had to be, so to speak, replaced and redeemed by the Levian. There, the number's not rounded off. There, the number's exact. Because there, you had to have the replacements. And then those who weren't replaced had to actually redeem. So therefore, there's that change. The regular number is rounded off. The Levian are rounded off to conform with the same way that everybody else was counted. But the firstborns had to be different. Then I saw brought down the following. That Reb Chaim Kanievsky Shlita and B'nai Brak. So he said over that he initially assumed that the census numbers were rounded, but when he mentioned this to his father, Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Kanievsky, was known as the Stifler Gain, that when he told this to his father, the Stifler responded that a number written in the Torah must be exact. And God must have had a reason why he miraculously caused each tribe to have such even numbers of people. The Torah has a number. The Torah is completely true. It's got to be exact. Why? There has to be a reason why the B'nai Shalom wanted wanted everything rounded off to a zero. Okay, just wanted to share that. Now, here's something very interesting. Next thing. Let's turn to page 736. This is Perek Gimel Mishnah Aleph. Okay, the Eila told us Aaron and Moshe. These are the generations of Aaron and Moshe. B'yom Dibur Hashem es Moshe b'Har Sinai, on the day that Hashem spoke to Moshe on Mount Sinai. Now, if you take a look at the first Rashi, Rashi asks the following question: the Eila told us Aaron and Moshe. The opening words are: these are the generations of Aaron and Moshe. But if you read a few lines afterwards, the only ones mentioned are Aaron's children, not Moshe's children. So why are we calling Aaron's children told us Moshe, the offspring of Moshe? So Rashi says, again, this is the Rashi at the beginning of the first line of Rashi, the right column. Vein emasker el b'nei Aaron. The Pasuk says these are the generations of Aaron and Moshe, but the only ones mentioned are Aaron's children. The Nikru told us Moshe of Ishamamdan Torah. Why are they called the generations, the children of Moshe? Because he taught them Torah. Melamed teaches us. If you teach someone else's child Torah, ki'ilu ma'ala l'akasev ki'ilu yaldai. The Pasuk considers it as if you gave birth to him. And this is the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Gemara in Sanhedrin. But what precedes the Gemara in Sanhedrin is a different saying. And that saying goes, shekol ha'megadol yasem b'seich b'esei. Anybody who raises an orphan in their home, ma'ala l'akasev ki'ilu yaldai, the Torah considers it as if he gave birth to him. And one of the sources the Gemara brings is from the book of Rus, that we will read on Shavuos, that when Rus married Boaz and she had a child, the neighbors called this child a name saying, Yulad Bein Lanami, a son was born to Naomi. Now, Naomi wasn't the one who gave birth. V'chi Naomi Yolda, V'le Rus Yolda. Nami wasn't the one who gave birth. Rus was the one. Ela Rus Yolda, V'Nami Gidla. Rus gave birth to the boy. Who raised the boy was Nami. And therefore, it's called a son was born to Nami. Okay? Now, then later on, after the Gemara finishes discussing this idea of raising a child, right? And the Gemara was focused on raising a orphan. Then the Gemara brings also another example of where we consider that you've given birth to someone else's child, and that is the what Rashi brings down here on this pasuk. Ar b'shmuel bar Nachmeni Rabbi Yenison, chamalabed ben chaveri Taira, malav akasav kilu yoldei. You teach someone else's child Taira as if he gave birth to him. Okay. So now, there is a commentary on Shulchan Aruch called the Chachma Shlomo, from Shlomo Kluger. And Shlomo Kluger discusses the following question. He says, Hinenis tapakti. I had a question. And his question was, if a person does not have his own children, right? A person is supposed to, there's a mitzvah to have children. It's the mitzvah pruervu. And sometimes it happens that a person doesn't have children, can't have children. So the Chachma Shlomo says, if you raise an orphan, could that be considered a fulfillment of the mitzvah? Because the Gemara says, if you raise an orphan, the Pasuk considers it ki'ilu yoldo. It's as if you gave birth to him. So does that, as if you gave birth to him, mean really? Is it really, does the Torah really consider it exactly like giving birth? And if it does, then we could argue that a person who's not able, doesn't biologically have children, could fulfill the mitzvah by raising an orphan. So he says that this would be dependent on a different argument, which I did not look up the source of that argument, what that argument is about. But he says that we have the Paiskim, the Drisha, and I think it was the Taz. But there's an argument that whenever the Gemara says, ki'ilu, it's as if. So what does it's as if mean? Does as if mean as if, mamish, as if, actually as if, or it's as if, but it's not actually. It's not actually. So that would make the difference here. That makes a difference here. If you consider it as if really, actually, then we could say that you do fulfill the mitzvah. Otherwise, you can't. Now I bring this in because, again, it relates to the Rash, the Gemara that Rashi brings down, and it's just a very interesting idea. At the same time, though, I was bothered by the fact that the Chochma Shlomei doesn't have his question. He only focuses on raising an orphan. He doesn't focus on teaching someone else Torah. So I'm not exactly sure why that is. He only mentions it about raising the child. Excuse me?
It also uses Kilo.
Gemara says Kilo. So, if you're focusing on the ki'ilu part, right, and that's what the question revolves around, then would we say the same thing regarding teaching someone Torah?
Sex fake. Raising an orphan, you know he raised him. Teaching the Torah, well, did you teach him? Well, did you
it still says ki'ilu, but it says ki'ilu yodai.
If you raise the orphan, I can tell you, yeah. You gave him food.
So you need to know what teaching Torah, you're really what you're right, saying is, what does it mean teaching Torah?
Exactly. Okay. At the end, do you know?
But the Gemara still says it, so there's got to be a point where you could be able to identify that. All right, I just thought that it's just an interesting idea, because the truth is, I was also wondering, according to this Chochma Shlomei question, does that orphan now have, are we going to say they have actual rights of inheritance too?
Respect? That's good.
Excuse me?
That's a mitzvah of respect.
Mitzvah of respect. Now again, could be as if you gave birth to him, but it's only from your direction to his, I don't know. But yeah, it'd be the same kind of question.
It's one way.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. All right. The last thing I want to mention is going back to actually the beginning of the parsha, and that is that going back to page 726, where the pasuk says, "Vayidabra Moshe Hashem el Moshe b'Bar Sinai b'Ol Moed." Hashem spoke to Moshe in the Sinai desert in the Ol Moed on the first or the second month of the second year of leaving Egypt. So on these words, Hashem spoke to Moshe in the Sinai desert, the Medrash says, and this would be a relevant idea to Shavuos that's approaching, the Medrash says that the Torah the Torah was given with three things: Ba'esh, fire; Ba'mayim, water; Ba'midbar, in the desert. That's what the Medrash says here. So, what exactly does it mean? What's the point of that? The Torah was given fire, water, desert. What does that mean? So, Meir Shapiro, that's all explained in the following way: that it really means to represent what the Jewish people have to be ready to go through in order to be able to live by the Torah. There are situations where we have to go through fire, we have to go through water, we have to go through desert. Each one of these things represents different situations of Mesiras Nefesh, of self-sacrifice, of total devotion and dedication that Jewish people must show, need to show, even in the most difficult times, in order for Klal Yisrael to continue to exist. And therefore he says, Eish represents Avram Avinu jumping into the fire. That even if it means basically giving up your life, that you're going to be ready to do it. Water represents the story of Nachshon. Nachshon jumped into the water before he knew that anything was going to happen. Okay? That is where you have right. So he says, Avram represents the individual's self-sacrifice. He was an individual ready to give up his life for Hashem. Nachshon, who was the first to jump into the Yam Suf, it says that everybody followed after him. You know, he was the one who did it. He's the one who started it, but everybody followed after. That represents the nation as a whole being ready to be based in efforts, or ready to give up everything in order for the Torah. The third, which is desert, represents, and this idea I've seen it in other places also, Mesiras Nefesh Shel Kol HaOm BaMidbar Toifash Mesiras Nefesh Masmida. Sometimes the Mesiras Nefesh that you have to do has to be over an extended period of time. The suffering that you may have to do, the self-sacrifice that you may have to experience, or have to be ready to live with, sometimes it's over an extended period of time. Sometimes the persecution is over an extended period of time, and you have to be ready to give up everything over an extended period of time. It's a drawn-out, difficult process. That is represented by the Jewish people in the desert. That's presented by the Jewish people in the desert, he says. And this is an idea that you find in other places. Yisrael hochu achri Hashem arbaim shana b'midbar b'eretz lo yizaruah. You know, we talk about how the Jewish people left Mitzrayim going into a land, that into a desert, which was a big thing. They showed their loyalty by going into a desert. And they had no idea how they're going to be, sustained. So I always thought, okay, the first time was rough. But after a while, it got pretty good, right? You had the water, you had the mud, okay, they got tired of it. But, you know, things should have been pretty good. Like we say, they sat and learned. You know, you didn't have to do anything else. But, again, we also know that the 40 years were a test because, really, you know, there was no saving up the food. There was no working and saving up money. Every day you had to be sure, every day you had to trust that Hashem was going to give you money. It was a scary place, even with everything that there was. So at the same time that they had so many miracles, so many miracles following them, the way he's saying it is, still the fact that the Bnei Yisrael had to live in a desert for 40 years was not as simple as we might think it is. And that was also a manifestation of Mesiras Nefesh, that was self-sacrifice on them. That they did it, they accepted it, they accepted this kind of difficulty over an extended period of time. And therefore, the point is that be it the individual, be it the nation, be it over an extended period of time, we have to be ready to be Mesiras Nefesh. We have to be ready to give up everything in order to be able to fulfill the Torah, to live a life by Torah, and to be dedicated servants of Rabbi Yisrael. Wish you all a very Chag Shavuot Sameach, a wonderful Yontif. And next week there will not be a class because of Yontif, but after that we will resume.
Thank you.